Buzzing whiskers in the throne room, glance your way, reminiscing about backroom acrobatics yesteryear. Sudden lakes that erupt from nowhere. Can't bestir myself to trouble you about any remote possibility. Suddenly, out of the pitch black phenomenon of order, an order that was uncomprehending, fervently wished for, and readily forgotten. I put on my hat and walked outside, and the rain was coming down. Blankets and blizzards, you know. It was getting to be about time to meet my friend and go to see a movie, but suddenly this car came up and asked me if I had any spare gas in my pocket. I'll be damned, I said. Thank you for the impression that a particular monster has cloaked idiosyncrasies with a baleful posterity. Chicken fat. Screed.
Good evening, comrades, and welcome to the August 2021 edition of Poet Radio. Tonight's program centers on a newly released CD book publication. It's A Stool Pigeon Universe, produced by the Splatter Trio with poet Steve Benson. I first encountered Steve and his work when I was living in and around the Bay Area in the early 90s. Specifically his book, Blue Book, as well as his work with the musicians in the Splatter Trio, which I was introduced to through correspondence with one of its members, Gino Robert. The track you heard just a few moments ago came from a cassette magazine, WeXV, which I co-edited in 1992. Later, I knew Steve a bit when he and I were both living in upstate New York in the 90s. He now lives in Maine, where he is a clinical psychologist. I recently caught up with Steve and conversed with him about this work, but before turning to that and playing excerpts from the CD, I wanted to mention that this is an extraordinarily beautiful production, not only in the sound quality of the artistic output, but the object itself. Unlike many fine poetry or music CDs, this one is a hardcover book featuring copious amounts of images and texts, beautifully designed by DJ Barrett Studios and printed and manufactured by Grupo Fogra in Mexico earlier this year. Its brightly and solid colored covers and spine are reflections of the content within. I was glad to be able to catch up with Steve Benson and talk to him about this work earlier this month. Steve, congratulations on the release of the Splatter Trio plus Steve Benson. It's A Stool Pigeon Universe. It's a beautiful package, and when I say congratulations, I mean congratulations about the poems too. You and the band really came together and put something spectacular, I would say, together, especially knowing that it's not choreographed and pre-rehearsed. Maybe we can start off by talking about the poet as improviser, which is such a challenging and difficult thing to do on the spot. How did you become interested in that? What led to this project?
Well, I think I became interested in it and decided to stick my neck out and try something like a full-length, in public, improvisational, poetic adventure once in 1979, I think it was, in San Francisco, when I just was noticing that ever since years in college, whenever I'm introducing a piece of writing out loud in a poetry reading, I tend to be talking around to get to it in ways that seem to be very amusing and engaging and often funny, or stumbling across meanings that I hadn't expected as I spoke in advance of reading something else that I had written. And I felt like, well, maybe this is something I can just have really an interesting time exploring more further. And I wonder what will happen if I agree or tell the world I'm going to show up and do a full length. I'm just going to improvise and whatever I say, and I don't know what it's going to be. And I decided it would be in a gallery space that had a poetry reading series, and so it was all under the rubric of poetry reading, even though there was no text to be read. And I arranged with a dear friend in New York City who was a composer, to prepare a sound background for it, sort of room noise, and he sent me 3 reel-to-reel tapes to play during the 45 or 50 minutes of the work, and I took a little bit of, I think it was then, maybe it was later, I took a little bit of a dance, modern dance kind of workshop, for 1 week or 1 weekend or something, to feel my way further into being physically present and moving in space while I spoke. And then I did this thing, and after I did it, I was very insecure and doubtful, and I thought it was really boring, and a lot of sentences started with the same one or two words, and I wasn't so happy with it, but I was very interested. So I transcribed the whole thing and found, oh, well, it is interesting. It really is. And so I've often worked with oral improvising since then in different ways, sometimes for a shorter period, sometimes for a longer period, but nearly always in public presentations or in some sort of time-defined practice in my home, and often transcribed the results as well as preserving the sound of whatever was laid down at the time, and finding it kind of, it goosed me. It was interesting and fun and mysterious, and like something had been born and was flapping its wings and jumping out of the nest each time, more or less. There were times it didn't work, but mostly I felt like, oh, I'm very happy with this. And it wasn't very constant. It was intermittent that I would be doing things more or less improvised, sometimes taking off from material such as films that I had made and projected, and using that as a text or a basis for things, and sometimes working with music, such as a friend playing music while I was talking, or a recording of, say, Beethoven's Sixth Symphony that I worked with as an occasion for making up words to talk about, to use out loud.
The idea that you will do these and then transcribe them is also really interesting. And I should tell listeners who probably have not seen this publication yet, that in it you have you or someone has transcribed the improvisations that appear on the CD, and then you have a whole section of transcriptions. I mean, this is a very generous production. This is not a little CD booklet. This is, how many pages are there?
It's a hardcover book.
Yeah, it's 112 pages. So yeah. It's not just the material from the sessions that you had at the Splatter Trio, but other investigations you had, I think mostly after that or at the same, around the same time.
There are comments on the recordings and the process of putting out, making the work happen by the other musicians and me. And then there also is about a 50-page book within the book of poetry or related writing that I was doing in the period before and after and that actual recordings happened in 1992. So there's some texts that I wrote that are almost entirely unpublished before from that period, a little bit, you know, a year or two before and after the recording session, which was all just the recordings that are on the disc or from a 2-day recording session in Berkeley.
There's also the Norman Fisher's Everybody Might As Well Be the Moon as the Forest commentary. Yeah. In here, which is very creatively written and like borrows from the poems and flows very nicely. So with the improvisation, let's focus on the CD for the moment and your work with Splatter Trio. Were there any prompts? I mean, you talked just a little bit about your process in there, and I was wondering, well, this is a practice, so what is the practice of your improvisations?
Yeah, it was really the practice that the band would do too. I mean, sometimes they played pieces that one of the members had composed, but usually they worked very improvisationally together and could do completely free improvisations. And that's what we were doing as a foursome also. I was trying to be, as a voice, as a vocalist, not particularly a singer, but a fourth player in a quartet for the time being, and to contribute in the spirit, as I took it, that any other instrumentalist might contribute, except that they're words, so they wind up foregrounding themselves in funny ways that we, because we listen differently to the language, and if we understand the language especially, and it's the human voice, so the responsibilities are a little different and the responsivities are a little different. We just agreed that we weren't figuring out in advance any cues or anything, who's going to come in when, who's going to be holding back or silent, or what's the tempo going to be, or what's the timbre going to be, or anything. We just paused and left or talked a little bit or took a breath and then said, okay, we ready? And we started another one.
Well, the idea that you are a musician in the band, but you're using words, definitely comes through in all the work I've heard. And you know, you're very clearly listening to what's happening around you, and you're interacting as a wordsmith in the musical context and embracing, what is it? I saw some phrase in here like the unknown. You know, there's some idea of the unknown in your mind or collectively.
Well, certainly we don't know what is going to happen. We don't even know how it will sound to somebody else as we're doing it. And there's also this kind of miracle of having come together to do this thing. It certainly felt like that to me. Like, what an astonishing, wonderful opportunity that these three very excellent improvising musicians who are used to working with each other are glad to share an opportunity with me in such a whole way that my contribution is not at all secondary to what each of them is bringing in. I was very thrilled at that.
Well, it speaks to your strength as an experimentalist to not only get their attention, but to be able to do it at all, Right. I think so many poets rely on the script, and that's understandable. They've spent, you know, hours, weeks, months preparing their poems. But this is something entirely different than that.
Yeah.
And things come up that wouldn't come up if you were sitting in your garret or whatever. Right.
No, I mean, certainly not.
There's some really rich neologisms that you managed to come up with on the spot. I caught and
really on the spot.
And you're also riffing with the way words sound or letters sound even, which is.
And the way the voice can sound, different tones and rhythms and pacing and pauses and holding back and pushing out. And it was really fun to be with the music happening with me and me with it, and to say, well, I'm planting my voice here. I could make all sorts of choices. Nobody was telling me not to be goofy or silly. You know, it was anything goes. Anything was possible. I could be serious or totally maniacal and loony or lie or whatever. So that's a kind of part of the fundamentals of improvisation. Yeah.
Well, it's so refreshing and imaginative. And I was thinking about, I don't know if you ever saw the interview I did with Cecil Taylor, but we were talking about his poetry, and I was speaking with him about improvisation. He said, well, actually, the only improvisation here is how the voice is used. But then he proceeded to talk about how his idea of the poet being a sponge. And I'm wondering how that might apply to the content of what you brought to the band. I mean, I'm wondering how much you can remember how these things came about. Were there things that you were maybe reading or I don't know, the milieu you were in with the experimental poets in the Bay Area? How does that idea of a sponge apply, being a poet being a sponge, apply to the improvisations you were doing?
I can imagine a sponge being squeezed and the fluids being splashing out of it, and that seems perhaps to be occurring during the pieces that I recorded with Splatter. But the content filling up the sponge, it really comes from my entire life of hearing voices. That, you know, we hear voices from radios, from movies, from singers singing songs, from people talking on the bus and in seats nearby, from teachers and other students in our classrooms, if we're a student, which most of us have always at some point remember being a student.
Yeah.
And we soak it up. It's not just soaked up from privileged opportunities like going to poetry readings. It's soaked up from everything. And then, of course, other languages soaked up that's not vocal necessarily, but that is subvocal, from reading books, so that even reading in translation or in the original language that somebody wrote in, I'm subvocalizing all the time as I read it. And my voice is assuming different characteristics and qualities that are scarcely conscious of, but they're happening in my brain or mind or something as I'm reading. And I can hear the voice of this or that writer, and how their tone and pacing go as different.
What's so unusual and powerful is that you'd never, in these recordings, there's no like sliding into something one might expect in that kind of paradigm. You're not, there's no familiar quotes from movies or what have you. It all seems, you know, so original and lively. Right. I mean, I think that the music probably helps, right? Because there's so much interaction and interplay with the music. It's very exciting that way. You know, I'm going to take a break here and play some of the CD. I'll play the first tracks. They're somewhat short. And we'll be back with more talk. We're listening to Steve Benson and Splatter Trio here on Poet Radio. Stay tuned. Thank you.
sweat slides along everywhere we go. Can't live without it. Smothering something. What's the difference? A smatter of inattention is relaxing. Roles can get played without noticing or in a highlighted focus of irony or show-offiness or strategy. School takes a molecule and scumbles it, makes a technology break apart into its component pieces in a proof to stew you. You don't need to get stuck. You can breathe through every aperture available to you. The black smoke is an expression of hurtling neurons. Empty and likable, stirring against the deep maroon background. Well, it's not exactly maroon, but it's some kind of earth tone like that. Lines crisscrossing, and they kind of have a spindly twisted quality themselves that only makes nature look like somebody did it on purpose with a knife and a palette knife and a brush or a broom. Falling off to one side, however, to embrace the asymmetry, shuddering there in an unperturbed masquerade of genitalia. Scoot. Little bird, you dangle from the sky, your eyes so bright to wiggle through the blue night. Yeah, you can see the stars through their reflections in your plastic mind, which we keep rehearsing.
Yeah. Integrate, consolidate, refocus, formulate, cut apart, slither, slant, burnish, and drop a cave in the wall. I mean, you know, the stability opens. Creeping forth like a child into the bathroom. What's that thing? White and gleaming. Just sit on it!
All right, that was the Splatter Trio and Steve Benson. Some cuts from the new book CD set called It's a Stool Pigeon Universe. Been talking about improvised poetics and this project. What else?
Yeah, you were talking about how it sounds original, like I'm not falling back on routines or quotations or repeating certain word phrases in order to buttress, keep on going and produce some more material. And part of what an ethic, I guess, for me of improvising is that I want to be sure that I don't know what's going to happen next and that I don't fall into something that that sounds or looks predictable to the audience listening, whoever might be listening to a recording or in person live. And so I want to kind of keep changing it up, and I'll play tricks in my own brain and voice to turn something that might have been an assertion into a question or a negation. I might, flip around a word use or just change the subject radically all of a sudden. And in doing, hopefully, I let the unconscious and the intuitive have more play in the activity, and it occurs at the cost of subject matter being at all tendentious or consistent. I'm not trying to make a point. I'm not trying to tell people how to live in any authoritative way or how to change their belief system or anything like that. I'm really looking to find the falling off the edge of uncertainty and let the negative capability riddle my own verbal activity as much as I can in order to keep from getting used to anything. And that, I think, is pretty audible in these recordings.
In some of the work, anyway, I find a very coherent set of observations are being made. It's not like, I mean, you may be freewheeling, but yet in the end, and one of the examples of that is, I think the poem is called Eventually the Clouds. It's on one of the cuts on the CD. And, you know, I mean, it can be done for a line or two, but mm-hmm. then that you are able to extend it while the different changes are happening in the music and what have you. That, I think that's a reflection of the thing you were just speaking of.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it that sometimes I manage to kind of carry on with the same line of thought or speech or something that dovetails or echoes back, and that there's more sense to it than I might necessarily have expected, or I was able to keep making sense without feeling like this is getting stale and dry and predictable. I kept feeling surprised, and then that seemed like completely good and right to keep on going so long as that was the case, and a miracle if it could happen.
Right. Well, the brain, you know, many people think it's a linear apparatus, but I don't happen to see it that way. But I guess it's mm-hmm. our duty as writers, as artists, to attempt to make that happen no matter what your approach or relationship with language is.
I think that, there are parts of the brain that like linear rules and maps, but a lot of the brain is all over the place, interacting with everything else in the brain all the time. It's really fun to open up to that however we can, if we, you know, when we find opportunity.
Eventually, the clouds were streaming with hypothetical precipitants, and the crowds of people that had been born and grown and had their lives sustained all over the ground were drenched in the downpour. These wet things were meaningless, except that they were all designed by intentional speculators with the best interests of the populace in mind. Anything can happen. Only this and that does. It slows down and speeds up unpredictably. Just when you're half expecting it not to. Maybe because you're half expecting it to. Hard to tell the difference between expectations and wishes and fears.
Is this the sum total of the sessions, or is
that? Oh, no. There's a lot more, and that's not the only recording session that we did. We did another one perhaps 8 months or a year or so earlier. There are a lot of other tracks, some better than others. And we did a one-hour radio program on KPFA as guests in a program called Mob Ecstasy. And that, I think, is a wonderful full recording. And we did one or two live sets with audiences, maybe more than a couple. And some of those were recorded. So there are other materials existent, but these are the ones we just decided to focus on, this ultimate opportunity that we had. It was the last time that we worked together, partly because I left the Bay Area and moved east to do an internship for a whole year in the Boston area. And then I wound up staying on the East Coast after that. And so this was sort of the swan song, 2 days in the studio, extravaganza for our opportunities to work together. And it's funny because I mean, I listened to the tracks that I had somehow taken away with me, and I loved them. And I wanted for the next 5 or 10 or 15 years, why don't we make something out of this? Can we possibly put out a CD or something? And then one of the band members, Miles, who does keyboards and a lot of studio work himself, approached me and offered, like, why don't we listen to these things and think about putting together a CD? And I was thrilled. And so it's a dream come true for me.
Anybody can tell God what role to play. You don't need to conduct a survey. Just cloak yourself in a veil of imported innocence and pray your brains out that way, slave. Feeling. blacked out is just part of the experience. Nomad's land is home, basically, to anyone who would last. So I'll jimmy the window open and breathe in some fresh air. Get up on the level. Let's get in the dirt. Let's boogie to
So now I'm working on a piece of writing for two different sittings every day that are improvised as writing, and I'm just fascinated and avoidant and remembering to do it and exploring what that opportunity yields for me or for the text itself, and not preoccupied. I'm just joyous that this recording could happen and that it can be released and that people can enjoy it, and there's various ways to access it, particularly through the website where it's sold. You can simply listen to the tracks on the website too, which is in the Bandcamp mess of pages that people are selling albums on.
So it is on Bandcamp, yes. The Splatter Trio .bandcamp.com.
Yeah,
maybe that's it.
I think so.
This book CD was released by Rastascan Records, which is now got to be three decades old, with their catalog, and is run by Gino Robert, I believe.
And he's the percussionist on these recordings.
That's
wonderful, playful, very serious and skilled and energetic.
Yeah, totally.
Percussionist.
And was it the whole group that decided on which material to include on this, or was that?
It was the way we did it was first Miles Boyson and I sat in his studio one weekend when I was visiting in the Bay Area about a year and a half ago, just as the coronavirus pandemic was breaking out. We just sat and listened to many. Much more material than this is. And we picked out about 60 cuts that we thought were the best, that really we were thrilled and surprised and amazed by. And then we shared all those recordings with Gino Robert, the drummer, and Dave Barrett, the sax player in the group, and asked them, well, select from these, weed this out, take out what you don't like. And we sort of went back and forth like that for a month or two until we had it down to 30, which could fit on a CD, some are shorter, some are longer, but none are more than 5 or 6 minutes long. Most are somewhat shorter than that. It was a really nice process because we all had our say, and nothing went into the final result that anybody had misgivings about. I was really happy about it, yeah.
We'll listen to some more of the Splatter Trio and Steve Benson. It's a Stool Pigeon Universe here on Poet Radio.
I don't need to bury my face in the freeze frame because my nose is so big I've lost hope. My home in the forest is sunk in ancient fairy tales. Sinking, That's the way I live out my days. Experience. Wind blows through the trees. What do you expect? An aching heart is mind. Blasphemy encroaches on every moral code. Spoon-fed absent-mindedness elicits an indifferent shrug before sleep.
Steve, I was looking at a photo that's included in, and this may go back to the whole process thing, I'm not sure, but there's a photo in this booklet, and you're on stage, and it looks like Gino is behind you, so it's a splatter gig, and you have some sort of music stand, but you also curiously have a set of Walkman headphones around your neck, and I was wondering if there was any connection between, like, in the moment at a gig, would you have such stimulation, or was that be somehow part of your process?
It might have been. One of my tricky trips when I've done poetry readings as larger, you know, improvisational presentations has been to provide something into my own ears and riff on it or play on it or change it up or talk over it. And the audience may or may not be hearing the background material at the same time. If it's on earphones, then usually I'm the only person hearing it. But often I make mistakes in my technical setup or things unravel or in different ways that I'm trying to make the sound of that available to the audience too. And so I might have been doing that. I might have prepared something, either sounds or voices, to be feeding off of a little bit while we were working. But I honestly don't remember right now.
Well, the earphones aren't in your ears. They're kind of down around your neck. It's just one of those things that caught my attention.
So I might have used them and not used them at the same performance for a while. Yeah.
I mean, this is a brilliant connection and very fortunate that you were able to make contact with these musicians. And do you have any influences that way? Or are there things that people you saw that, you know, that say, oh, I'd like to try that? Or
I don't know if there have been. I think it could be that we might say, well, reading Gertrude Stein was a big startling effect on that sense, like I could just start and keep going, and it turn out really interesting if I'm on it consistently. Or listening when I was in college, for some amazing reason, a bunch of poets from the second generation New York school came up to campus and had a weekend where they're presenting a lot of work, including a sort of happening event that John Giorno staged, and I could imagine that kind of getting into my subconscious in a sense, like there are so many possibilities about how poetry could be realized and presented, and whether it's improvised or scripted, it could just be different than what we're familiar with as somebody wrote a text to be read on the page and then read it out loud, which has always seemed also kind of like an odd thing. Like poetry started out being oral, but now we've made it a thing where the writing and the text on the written page silently becomes more taken for granted as primary. So I think there's been that kind of question in my mind all along too, about the nature of so-called poetry or what might count as poetry.
You have some connection with a language group or language poets.
Oh, yeah.
But your approach to composition, at least in this case, is very different. The presentation of it certainly is unlike most of what I've heard from anyone, not just that group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think of it as familiar on any basis at all, even in Steve Benson, but it sort of fits in with what Steve Benson has been doing off and on and in and out over the years.
But it's interesting you're saying now that you're, I mean, I believe you were talking about your writing practice now, and you look at it as improvising on the page.
Yeah. And I often, especially in recent times, am interested in typing what I've written. I mean, I might, if I'm writing longhand first in a notebook or something, and then typing it out and retaining pretty much everything about it. Sometimes there may be tiny changes that I make, but mostly I want to keep it as it is. And so it's following, in effect, many of the same principles that I do with making a transcript of spoken word improvisations that I do. And when I sit down to write, like right now, I have a practice that's compositional and intended to see if it can turn itself into a viable poem or book that would be of some considerable length, in which I write pretty much first thing in the morning, cup of coffee after brushing my teeth, and then I'm writing. Later, I write in the evening, but not at the very end of the evening. I write, you know, as I'm breaking from the day and various things I've been doing towards a more relaxed, dusking down, maybe watching something on a screen or listening to some music, getting ready for bed. So before that stage. And so I have these two elements of the day in which I'm writing, and each one trying to sort of incorporate or recall something about the period since the last writing, the half, you know, the 12 hours or so since the last part of the writing that I did, but include that in willy-nilly, helter-skelter, in any way that I happen to find and choose, even if I fail to include it. But the main gesture is to just start writing and see what I make right now in a certain number of lines. It doesn't go on for very, very long at any one time. But that's been very interesting, the quality of measure that comes up and the alternation between morning and evening, morning, evening, morning, evening as I'm working.
Do you find yourself tuning into ambient sounds? I mean, the work with splatter, obviously, or there's intentional sound happening, but do you think the unintentional household sounds or neighborhood sounds at all make an impact?
I haven't noticed it, but I'm sure they can make an impact. It's pretty quiet. Yeah. I'm in the country.
Yeah, right.
There are not a whole lot of noises, but if there was a heavy rainstorm, I'm sure that would be affecting something about what I was writing and how I was writing it.
And did I read somewhere, maybe even in this publication, that you have some, you're preparing some new publications, or where besides this wonderful set of recordings and the poems in the booklet, what else is happening?
There's a book that Chax Press from Tucson, Arizona, is going to put out within the foreseeable future, which means in a year or two or three, called What This Is. And that's three long poems that were notebook written and transcribed that I'm very proud of and interested in. And I'm also planning to publish myself a following volume called As It Happens. That's three more long pieces in verse, or in lines and word and clusters of material. And these are poems, I think, and they have syntactical qualities that make sense almost entirely all the time. Yet I don't have any program about what they're going to say or what they're about or anything like that.
Well, that sounds like you're staying quite active with the writing and publishing, which is terrific.
I'm so glad I can. Yeah.
And
so glad.
Perhaps maybe we'll even hear some of those other recordings with Splatter Trio. And you work with other musicians as well in the past, right?
From time to time, here and there. Right now, the Splatter Trio work stands out formidably in my own mind and memory, but I've done a bit of this and that with other musicians too. And including also with Dave Barrett, the saxophone player, he and I have done a couple of duet events together.
Well, here's hoping that that the CD and booklet and book get some attention, bring your work to new listeners, and a Splatter Trio to new listeners as well, because I always loved them, and you know, this is great. So I was happy to hear you say earlier that there are more recordings that you did, and if there is further interest, we will get to hear them.
It's just possible, isn't it? Yeah.
Very good, Steve. I've so much enjoyed getting reconnected with you and hearing this fabulous record and talking with you this evening. Thank you very much.
Right. Let's stay reconnected. I like it too very much.
That's great. Well, thanks for joining me on the Poet Radio this month.
Thank you. That's fun. Glad to be here with you and everybody.
Circus, you will never see, backed off, ineffectual, and the salt pouring into wounds opened up. Things impersonate a wired recession, formal, gloomy, having a course scrimped up by slaves beyond the shaved end of a cell specializing in molar runoffs. The false line my face feels when your fingers skitter across the stubble. Bunching up there, where the scars leave a blank tattoo. My resonance excites an internal forest of dreams to clear a cloud away from pride and open a bleak, humble hole, frumpy and damnation dynamic, super coordinated by sensation and blind chance, but better than that.
Once again, you've been listening to the Splatter Trio and Steve Benson. It's a Stool Pigeon Universe is their new CD book on Poet Radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
The idea is easy enough to distinguish, but actually the two things run together. The difference is in what you do with it. Are you gonna tear it apart? Are you gonna hold it up to your nose? Are you gonna like try to make a living from it? Sometimes when you're driving on the highway, if you swerve to avoid running over an animal, you might do some, you know, it might be really a dangerous impulse. I think sometimes about the wild child, you know, like the idea of a human being growing up with animals or alone, nowhere. I don't really mean somebody growing up in a hut of sensory deprivation. Suppose there were no code. Well, you can't really have that, but maybe you could have a code that doesn't make any sense to people unless they try harder than they are going to. Well, that's not a very peculiar idea, if you think about it. The ribbon that's supposed to mean something because it's got a certain color and it's worn on some part of the body or something could be stretched out until it frays and breaks into a beautiful design. Don't look that way. I can't imagine somebody's voice clearly, but I can hear it. Wiping his shirt sleeve in the stain left on the tabletop.